Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon and welcome to What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights with me, your host, Katie Kiefer. And I have a really fantastic show today. I'm very excited about it. I'm sure a lot of my listeners read the article in The New Yorker about ecovative design. My guest today is Eben Bayer. He is the CEO and co-founder of Ecovative, a biomaterials company that grows sustainable materials and products using unique living organisms. Wait until you hear this story, you guys. Ecovative has been recognized by the World Economic Forum as a tech pioneer for its potential impact on climate change by the Postcode Lottery Green Challenge, and recently won an environmental quality award from the EPA. Ecovative has been widely covered in the media, including said New Yorker article, which I think was like May 20th, articles in Wired, Popular Science, and Time. In 2009, Ecovative created Mushroom, trademarked packaging, a cost-competitive alternative to styrofoam, used by major brands in the packaging, furniture, and lifestyle industries. The technology is now licensed to Sealed Air. I guess that's the people who make the little pillows that get packed in your cardboard boxes. They partnered with Ecovative to expand production throughout North America and Europe. Ecovative is now developing its material platform into other markets, including consumer goods, building, construction, and vehicle applications. Eben Bayer studied at Rensselaer Polytech Institute, where he received dual degrees in mechanical engineering and innovation and design. And for the 18 years prior to that, he studied agriculture and farming through hands-on learning at his family farm in central Vermont. Welcome to the program, Eben. Thank you so, so much for taking time out of your day today. I'm really excited to tell people more about your product. So, Eben, you're there?
Yeah, I am. Thanks
okay,
for having
cool.
me.
You're most welcome. Yeah, I'll shut up now and let you talk now. First of all, tell people, in case people missed the amazing article in The New Yorker, tell us, what is mushroom packaging and how does it work?
So mushroom packaging is what we call a direct replacement for foam in packaging. And, you know, we talk a lot about expanded polystyrene, but it can be any of the foam materials you get in the mail. Mm-hmm. And unlike foam packaging, you know, which takes really millions of years to form, you use it for weeks or months, and then you leave it in your backyard, it would take millions of years to break down.
Right.
Mushroom packaging is our biological equivalent. Mm-hmm. So we grow it in days. It works just as well as plastic foams in packaging, but it breaks down naturally in your garden or compost pile. So our whole philosophy is to give people, ship people, nutrients, not pollutants.
Yeah, sounds great. And so when you use this, give us an example of what it's being used for now in terms of packaging so people can get a picture of it. It's like you use it, you do molded packaging, right, for specific products or for...
Yeah, imagine you get a toaster in the mail and you pull it out of the box and there's that squeaky noise and then something cracks and there's that white, solid plastic material in your hands. We're trying to replace that with something that's healthier, better, and more sustainable.
Absolutely. I think it's just an incredible idea. So now I want you to take us through the process of how you and your partner figured out that mushroom roots are going to make a glue that will hold together virtually any organic substance that will be strong enough to do what you need it to do.
Sure. Well, from my perspective, that, you know, the farming experience is key for me. And, you know, that in the intro there, that was really 0 to 18 years. So I don't know how much the first 6 years of learning counted, but
osmosis.
it was sort of a combination of seeing a natural property, actually at my family farm in Vermont, which is these mycelial tissue growing on wood chips, kind of holding them together in clumps. I know you're shoveling them. And then many years later at Rensselaer, taking a class on innovation and being challenged to create a better insulator. And it was the thought that, what could you use as a good glue, as an insulator or a resin, and looking to nature for a great resin, which is mycelium.
Uh-huh. So mycelium is, I think you described it as the roots of mushrooms. It's a fiber, it's a glue, it's a liquid, what is it?
Yeah, well, there's a couple ways to think of it. Any mycologist listening today are cringing when I say it's the roots of a mushroom, because it's not quite true, but it's a good analogy if you're familiar with plants.
Right, at all.
Yes, exactly. When I put on my my engineering hat, I think of mycelium as a self-assembling polymer. You know, it's a little smaller than the diameter of a human hair, and it assembles itself molecule by molecule, and there's a lot of it. And a single cubic inch of our product is almost a mile of fibers.
Amazing. And how do you guys, so what do? You extract the mycelium from a mushroom bed?
Yeah.
Then you somehow mix that in with agricultural wastes. Give us an example of some of the waste products that you're using that would normally just literally go to landfill or some other, you know, less worthy place.
Well, we like to think of this as an open loop feedstock. So we can use many different kinds of agricultural byproducts. And right now we use things like corn stalks, what's left over after you harvest the corn, cotton stalks, which is a byproduct from the cotton industry. And we're even using some new industrial crops that they're growing in the U.S., like kanaf pith. And kanaf's a great plant because it grows in drought-torn areas. It's really resilient, and they're trying to find uses for all the pieces of the plant.
Uh-huh.
And on the mycelium side, part of the magic is, you know, you're right, you do actually go out, find a mushroom that you think looks interesting, and take a little piece of it. But after that, it naturally keeps cloning itself, kind of like a plant would propagate. So you only have to add a little mycelium to each batch, just like you add a little yeast.
Uh-huh.
When you make bread.
Neat. So you add that into your presumably ground up agricultural waste, be it corn stalk, be it whatever, oat shells, I don't know, oat hulls. And then you pour it into a form and let it harden. Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah, it's almost like having concrete set or baking a cake, where you'd mix the ingredients together, you put it in a mold, and then, you know, rather than being just a chemical reaction, though, what's actually happening is the mycelium is growing throughout the ag waste, partially digesting it, so building its network around it, and then what it doesn't digest becomes kind of the aggregate, which makes up the composite.
Wow, amazing. This is so cool. So your company, as I mentioned in your intro, was featured in the New Yorker issue of May 20th, for those of you who want to go back and take a look at it. It's a very comprehensive article. And what I loved about it was that it gave a history of polystyrene and styrofoam, and then it sort of introduced your product and how they parallel. Were you happy with the article, by the way? You must have been thrilled, right?
Yeah, you know, you never know in that situation. You can't ask for something like that. And the author, Ian Fraser, I think did a tremendous job, not only kind of chronicling our history, but putting it in context of these other technologies. So I was really grateful for the article.
Yeah, I mean, so my next question is, how many deals have you cut since it published?
Well, we've been overwhelmed by the response, you know, from letters from school children to calls from multinationals, but I've got to admit, I kind of like getting the letters from school children more sometimes.
Oh, no kidding, right? Fascinating. It's really great to hear what kids feel when they see something like that, which almost, I mean, even to me, appears magical.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's a lot of that. So now, will you, do you anticipate that this product will eventually replace all other sort of polystyrene, styrofoam, petrochemically based plastics? Or does it have certain limitations that wouldn't allow it to go into one specific industry or another?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tall order. I would say, first, I think there's many more biological alternatives to plastics to be discovered. You know, nature has this incredible toolkit of natural polymers. Now, some you're really familiar with, like wood. Folks are just learning about, like mushroom. But there's all sorts of neat materials found in nature, in the ocean and crustaceans, and et cetera. And then there's always places where plastics are better. It's just, when I look at, for instance, say, the food packaging market, it's like 95% foam plastic.
Right.
And I think it could be the other way around, 95% natural materials, with those things that you really need a plastic for, maybe you want to last for 100 years, use that last 5%, use our plastics for that.
Yeah, I mean, I could see you use plastic for, say, cryovacking meat. That's about the only place where I see plastic as being pretty much irreplaceable, unless some other sort of fiber, you know, natural fiber thing comes up that would produce the same vacuum seal, because that's obviously what you're looking for in something like that. And it doesn't sound like your product could do that. But you could, like, all the styrofoam shells in restaurants, all of the styrofoam packaging in meat, you know, everything in the grocery store. I mean, we're going to talk about that in a minute. But I one thing I did want to touch on before we're going to have to take a break in a minute. And so I want to touch on the cost of your packaging versus conventionally produced packaging. Are those costs competitive? And is the carbon footprint similar in terms of energy consumed in order to produce your product versus conventional plastics?
Those are both great questions.
Oh, I'm so glad you think so.
Well, they're the ones that are always on people's minds, and I'm happy to talk about them. You know, our philosophy on costing is we have to be cost competitive. Any technology that disrupts an incumbent like plastics has to be at least the same price, if not cheaper. Otherwise, it's a feel-good thing that people don't implement. And I'm really happy to say that we've reached, in many of these markets, and particularly packaging, a cost parity with the incumbent material.
Amazing.
And it is amazing, but it's also... That's just the first hurdle. Then you still have to get people to switch, to adopt a new technology, to learn about it. So it still takes work. But that's without that, we you couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, in terms of carbon footprint, you know, costing we want to be equal on. You know, carbon footprint we want to be way more aggressive on. And there's lots of different ways to measure a carbon footprint of a material. You know, we like to look at a cradle-to-cradle analysis, so the whole life cycle. And you know, our kind of aspirational target is to use 1/5 to 1/10 the energy required to make the same amount of foam plastic. Mm-hmm. And we're not there yet, but we're well on our way and well below foam plastic.
So how will you do that? I mean, because do you require heat or light in order to make your product set up? Or to grow the mushrooms, what's the biggest sort of user of energy in your process?
Well, right now, the only place where we really require energy is in the drying stage, because this is biology, and like, you know, being a human made of water, biology needs lots of water to work well.
Yeah.
So the drying process is where we consume the most of our energy. It's still on a cubic foot basis, you know, piece of packaging to piece of packaging, a fraction of what's embodied in a piece of styrofoam, but it could also be done through other methods like solar drying. And we're constantly working to reduce the density of our material so it dries faster.
Wow. Okay. That's very interesting. You know what, Joe? Let's take our quick little sponsor drop. Eben, stay on the line. And we have to do a little sponsor drop. We'll be right back with Eben Bayer of Ecovative Design. This is What Doesn't Kill You. Stay tuned for the rest of this fascinating interview.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years, so it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
You're listening to Leaving by Dead Stars on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Stay tuned for more What Doesn't Kill You.
This is What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insight with me, your host, Katie Kiefer. On the line with me today is Eben Bayer, who is the co-founder of Ecovative Designs, a really unusual and groundbreaking firm that creates packaging materials and soon many other materials out of mushroom mycelium and agricultural waste. So welcome back to the program. Eben, thank you again for joining me. You know, as I read through your website and read some other pieces about you and the company, it seems as if your packaging concept or this particular sort of trademarked product has an almost infinite number of applications. Give us a list of some of the other opportunities that you see coming down the pipeline for you, in addition to sort of the molded plastic forms that people would put around toasters. Where else can this go? It's you know, it's seems so malleable.
Good. Well, we originally started in building material, and now we've reached a really reasonable level of scale with these with our packaging business. We're really excited to get back to that space because it's an area where people really are passionate about building with healthy, safe materials, and we're looking at everything from a conventional insulation you could stuff in your walls to some pretty out there projects. We've actually been growing a tiny house on a trailer at work the last month, and it's come out really well.
So tell me, because I had a question about that. Tell me about the tiny house. So what did you guys do? You built a frame, like a 2x4 frame, right? And then you basically blew this mycelium mixture in between a frame, like you put some sort of a frame to hold the walls in place and make them flat?
Exactly. It's kind of like building with really lightweight concrete. So there actually are no 2x4s in the walls, which is a benefit. So we put a 4x4 at each end of the wall, which is about 16 feet long, and we ran boards up the wall and blew our living material into the wall. And then over the last few weeks, it's been growing together, getting really strong, really stiff, and also gluing itself to the wood boards. So you end up with a wall with no studs, no thermal bridging, that's really strong and really affordable and easy to make. Two people could build a little tiny home like this in a day or two.
Oh my God, that's unbelievable! It's so cool.
Well, it violates a tremendous number of building codes today, which is why it's on a trailer.
Well,
but
that's
we hope it could be a future building method.
So you're saying that this could be used as an insulation, like the way they blow fiberglass into walls now? You could blow this mixture into walls because I'm thinking I want to do that. I have a big old pile of
house. Send me a note afterwards. We'll get you a secret.
I need some help with that. But I think it's just like, this is just an amazing thing. So inside, for example, if they were building a skyscraper, you would use this instead of something else as insulation? Or would you actually use this as a building material, say, for, would it support that kind of weight, I guess is my question, multi-story buildings?
What's nice about it is it's actually very structural. I mean, a skyscraper is aggressive, but many commercial and residential buildings that use framing methods like this, it becomes the structure of the building because it glues itself to all the other pieces. And unlike a foam, they actually use foam plastics like this. They blow it into walls and foam up in between the walls. But this material is both stiff and it's really fire resistant. So especially for commercial structures, we see that as a huge benefit.
Well, no doubt. And what about water resistant? Do you have to worry about it getting wet?
You don't have to worry about it getting wet like you splash water on it. It's quite water resistant, actually.
Uh-huh.
But like a 2x4 in your wall, if you were to submerge your house in a puddle or a lake for a long period of time, it would do what it's supposed to do and start to break down.
Uh-huh.
But that takes about as long or even longer than some wood.
So if you were to build a house out of this material in a floodplain, you might actually come out unscathed, more or less. I mean, your contents of your house would be ruined, obviously, but the house would still remain structurally sound.
Well, I have to say I had, unfortunately, a family house that was in a flood from in Vermont last year from Irene. And even those wood houses, you basically have to replace everything after they're flooded. So I wouldn't warranty better performance than that, but if you built a structure and put a good roof on it,
yeah, cool. And so, Eben, do you when you are changing up like what you're going to make this product into, whether it's insulation or structural, sections of a house or packaging, do you change the formula? Do you change the kind of mushroom you use? Do you change the kind of agricultural byproduct that you're using? I mean, are there different sort of mixes? Shall we say different aggregate mixes?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I personally find so exciting.
Uh-huh.
The chemical industry likes to point to all the different things you can do with different polymer chains. And we get to do the same thing. We could pick a different crop waste, maybe one that's more fibrous to get a really strong, tenuous material.
Uh-huh.
And we can even pick different mushrooms. We've tested hundreds of different mushroom types to see what their mycelium does. And they're all a little different. So we really do just a couple blends in packaging today. But it's just scratching the surface of what's possible with the platform.
How big is your company? How many people are working on this now with you?
I think we're about 55 people.
Wow. And are they all really young folks like yourself?
40,000 square feet of manufacturing space.
Wow. Can I come up and visit sometime?
Absolutely, yeah. Just hop on Amtrak.
Thank you. I'm unfortunately, be careful what you wish for, because I really do things like that. I love seeing how things are made. I'm fascinated by industrial, mechanical structure and processes. So I wanted to go back to food service, because styrofoam packaging in food service is just such, in fact, that's what really made me want to bring you on my show, since we're mostly a food centered radio station. I thought, well, how can I use this story to my advantage? And so I thought, well, you know, food service is really where styrofoam, that and, you know, flotation devices, food service seems to be a really big place for styrofoam use. And I wanted to know where you are in the permitting process. I mean, how much support or interest has the government shown in your product? Where does this fit into sort of all of that sector of the economy? Because it is certainly a big one.
Well, food service is a great one, too, if you think about the compostable aspect for both constituents. It's a challenge, though. You know, to get regulated to be a food contact material is a lot of work. We're still learning about it.
Uh-huh.
And, that's one of those applications where you really want a good collaborator, someone who's in the industry who understands it to help you make an entry point. So it's something we're watching really closely, and a place we hope to be in the coming years, but we're still trying to figure out exactly how we do it. And just as an aside, I think there's some other really interesting complementary technologies like WikiCells, which makes new kinds of edible food packaging. So there is some exciting stuff starting to happen in that area.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you have competitors. I mean, are there other people who are producing materials like yours that are made from organic products that are different, that are using different technologies or different types of ag waste or different types of glue structures or whatever it is? Do you have competition?
There's no one out there right now using mycelium or mushroom technology to make these sorts of products. You could think of paper products as paper plates, as a competitor, egg cartons, but we really view them as a friend in the space, right? Our competitors are synthetic plastics. But like I kind of said at the beginning, I think I would welcome some more biological competitors in this space, because sadly, there just aren't a lot of offerings yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, you guys seem to have hit on this, particularly smart blend. And, you know, as you said, it's all because you observed wood chips being grown together, on a pile with mushrooms on them, and how they sort of became whatever, rigid or glued together when you were a kid. I mean, that's a very cool observation and a very cool thing to have taken on into your process with your professor, who sounded great, by the way, at Rensselaer Polytech.
Well, that's a great point, because I got to tell you, I'm sure lots of people may have observed that in nature, but it's what happens next, and particularly folks like Bert Swerzy, who encouraged Gavin and I to start this company. And then, like I said, there's 55 really smart, hardworking people. I'm sure there's people at work today who are giving it their all to make this happen, because they care about this, they care about our planet, and they care about really having an impact. So it's a whole team effort.
What about partnering up with somebody like Whole Foods? I mean, they certainly use their share of plastics and styrofoam, and this would play to their marketing mantra very well, no?
Well, that would actually be exactly what we'd like to do, is find a real expert brand-leading partner in the food service space and work with them to create an offering. Because with design, you really have to understand every piece of how a package is used to really see how you can replace it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm just thinking about, like, when you go to buy their, salad bar, and they offer either a paper container or a clamshell.
They do? Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know, I mean, so it seems like you have a natural in there. And also, I was thinking about, like, colleges and universities would be a natural place to do this, because they send so much food out in plastics or some kind of styrofoams. I mean, I can remember seeing that a lot. Not that I went to college, but that I've seen it on other people's college campuses. But I was thinking, like, Bon Appetit Management Company, they're all about that earthy, crunchy stuff, right? Anyway.
Well, hopefully some of them are listening.
I'm going to make sure that they get a copy of this, certainly. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have, like, 5 minutes left. What about one last thing I wanted to ask you about was, the Navy, that's kind of how styrofoam got its start, wasn't it, with flotation devices? Does your product work in the water? Does it float?
It does. It actually floats really well. One of our engineers made a boat out of it, a really primitive one last fall, which you can see a video of him collapsing out of it on YouTube. And we, one of our mycologists, Van Hook, is doing some really exciting work creating buoys out of this for use in Maine in the lobster industry.
Oh, neat.
Huge problem. These things get, you know, they last, again, really a long time, but they get topped off by propellers and other things and float up on the beaches. So,
right.
We'd like to get into that space. It's also a huge balance between making something that lasts, you know, long enough that it's useful, yet not too long.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you do want it eventually to go away, I suppose. But if it's, I mean, they're biodegradable. So once it gets torn up by whatever, boat propellers or just the ocean, right into the compost pile, no?
Exactly. Or into a fish's mouth.
Yeah, right. They can eat it. We could eat it too, correct? But it just doesn't taste good?
Well, yeah. I mean, you could eat a lot of things. and it doesn't taste good. You wouldn't get much nutrition out of it.
No. Okay.
It'd be a very fibrous diet.
Yeah, right, like dog biscuits. I mean, I remember trying those a few times, too.
Yeah, or cardboard.
Yeah, it was kind of like the eating cardboard. But I figured if the dogs liked it, you know.
We did talk about dog toys as an early application.
Oh, neat.
My cat likes it.
Really? So do you like balls and toys, or how have you formed it for a cat toy?
Oh, he, you know, a scratching post, or sometimes he kind of likes to lean up against on my desk at work.
Uh-huh.
Got that nice warm feeling.
A nice warm feeling. I love that. Well, listen, we have just a couple of minutes, so I want you to have an opportunity now to promote the Tiny House Project, because I want people to be able to know where to go and to look at that, because I thought it was really cool. So you have
a YouTube
video of that, right?
We do. If you go to mushroomtinyhouse.com, Sam, who's been the principal behind the Tiny House, has been live blogging his work on that with some videos. Lots of great construction photos. You can see how we're doing it, try and do it yourself. And the Tiny House is going to be shown for the first time a week at Yestermauer at the world's first Tiny House Fair in Vermont.
Yeah, when is that? I'd actually like to go to that.
It's coming right up. It's next weekend on Saturday and Sunday. And
oh, no kidding.
Sam Harrington's giving a great talk on Sunday.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Well, people should look for that. And then also your website. You have two websites. One is Mushroom Packaging, right? And one is Ecovative.
Yep. And Mushroom Packaging is really the one where you can learn about the product you can get today. And I should say, too, that Mushroom Packaging is being made by our great friends at Sealed Air now. So they've licensed the technology. They're providing it across North America and Europe. And they're kind of the key contact now to get Mushroom Packaging. Though we're hard at work on the technology behind it.
I see. So now Sealed Air, those are the guys who made those air pillows. That was kind of quite groundbreaking when those came out. As opposed to like
peanuts
and stuff.
Yeah, they have a history of being a really innovative company, and I think this is right on their track.
That's fantastic, Evan. I really think that's great. Well, I'm going to say thank you and goodbye now so that I can promote my next show.
Thank you very much.
Do hope you'll come back. I want to stay on top of this. I like your story a lot, and you guys are obviously so smart, and I think this is the wave of the future. I'm really excited for you, and I'm actually going to send you a client. But thank you again for joining me today. And folks, next week, Paul Greenberg will be joining me, author of Four Fish. We'll be talking about his new piece in the Food and Environmental Reporting Network about the dead zone in the Gulf. Back to my usual doom and gloom. I know you've missed that terribly today, but isn't it great when you see a company like Ecovative that is just right off the radar in terms of completely new groundbreaking ideas? I'm so excited for them. I'm excited for the rest of us that we're going to reap the benefits of their intelligence and technology. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to my sponsor, and we'll see you next week with Paul Greenberg.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.